नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we are reading from Canto 6, Chapter 5. Chapter 5 is entitled Narad Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha. Today we are on text 24. Sabhuya Pancha Janyayam. Sabhuya Pancha Janyayam. Ajena Parisantvitah. Ajena Parisantvitah. Putrana Janayad Daksha. Putrana Janayad Daksha. Savalashvan Sahasrinah. Savalashvan Sahasrinah. Sabhuya Pancha Janyayam. Ajena Parisantvitah. Putrana Janayad Daksha. Savalashvan Sahasrinah. Sabhuya Pancha Janyayam. Ajena Parisa Santvitah. Putrana Janayad Daksha. Savalashvan Sahasrinah. सह प्रजापति दक्ष भूयः अगेन पांचजन्यायाम इन द वूम्ब ऑफ हिज वाइफ असिक्नी और पंचजनी अजेना बाय लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा परिसांत्वितः बीइंग पैसिफाइड पुत्रान सन्स अजनयत बिगॉट दक्षः प्रजापति दक्ष सवलाश्वान नेम द सवलाश्वास सहस्रिनः नंबरिंग 1000 ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद ट्रांसलेशन व्हेन प्रजापति दक्ष वाज लैमेंटिंग फॉर हिज लॉस्ट चिल्ड्रन Lord Brahma pacified him with instructions. And thereafter, Daksha begot 1,000 more children in the womb of his wife, Panchajani. This time, his sons were known as the Shavalashvas. Purport. Prajapati Daksha was so named because he was very expert in begetting children. The word Daksha means expert. First, he begot 10,000 children in the womb of his wife. And when the children were lost, when they returned home back to Godhead, he begot another set of children known as the Savalashvas. Prajapati Daksha is very expert in begetting children, and Narada Muni is very expert in delivering all the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, the materialistic experts do not agree with the spiritual expert Narada Muni. But this does not mean that Narada Muni will give up his engagement of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. ओम ज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंगयते गिरीं यत् कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरु दीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण। So we are continuing the chapter Narad Muni cursed by Prajapati Daksha, and over the past few weeks we have seen how Narad Muni actually goes and preaches to the 10,000 sons of Daksha, and how being very self-realized, they were already purified because of doing austerities, and listening to the, hearing the instructions of Narad Muni and the allegory that he explained. It's very difficult for ordinary people to understand the allegory, but using their intelligence, they could completely understand the allegory which Narad Muni was explaining to them. And because of that, they actually gave up their pursuit of begetting children and becoming Prajapatis themselves, but they actually renounced everything and went back home, back to Godhead. And hearing this, you know, feeling the loss of his children, Daksha was very, very agitated and very, very upset and frustrated, as we can see over here, that he was lamenting because he lost his sons. So it's not that they were dead. They had actually become self-realized, but for according to Daksha, they were gone. They were not there for him to fulfill the purpose for which he had sent them, actually to do those austerities. So then Daksha starts lamenting, and we see in this verse that Brahma actually comes. Brahma is the father of Daksha. So he comes to pacify Daksha, and then Daksha, hearing the instructions of Brahma, he becomes a little pacified, and in this verse we see that he's again begetting 1,000 children from the womb of his wife. So in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that it is very difficult, actually, if you see and you look at this capability or capacity of Daksha to beget so many children. It's outstanding, or it's astounding if you hear of this capability of Daksha. Like, who can have 10,000? We know it is the previous ages, but still 10,000 children. And after that also, if they were gone, he again begot 1,000 children. So he was actually an expert. And that is what Prabhupada is saying over here in the purport, that he was an expert in begetting children. And it is not wrong to be expert in your field of activity. So Daksha was a Prajapati. His duty in this material world was actually to beget children. And that was the purpose for which he had come. Like Brahma wanted, it was the time of creation. This is, you know, in the very, very early stages of material world. It was the time of creation, and obviously Lord Brahma needed help in populating this whole material universe. So Daksha was actually fulfilling his duty towards Lord Brahma. And he was expert in fulfilling that duty. So it is not wrong to be expert in our service. So it is not that Daksha was doing something wrong if we see over here. He was expert in fulfilling his duty, and that is why he begot another 1,000 children. And that is why he was lamenting the loss of the 10,000 children, because that did not help him in his path of fulfilling his duty towards his father and towards the Supreme Lord. And we see that he was doing his duty in a very dharmic way. It was not that he was, you know, having sex for recreation and not procreation. It was not that he was a sense gratifier who was, you know, just trying to enjoy his wife and enjoy his senses. So he was having these children, and we see even in the previous chapter we saw, like towards the end of the chapter we saw that Daksha was given the instruction by Lord Brahma that you go and populate this universe, and therefore he's called Prajapati. And when he started populating the universe, he realized that, you know, he was not very happy with the type of population in the previous chapter. So he actually took a step back and he said, no, I am not very happy, so let me do some austerities. And therefore he takes sannyas. In the previous chapter, we hear him taking sannyas. He goes to the mountain, he performs lots of austerities there, and the Supreme Lord himself appears in front of him, being pleased with his austerities, and he blesses him in the execution of his duty. So he knew what is dharmic, he knew what is the right way. So even though he was expert in, like we might say, so-called sex life, but he was not doing it just for recreation. He was not doing it and enjoying it like cats and dogs. He knew the proper way, the religious way to execute that particular expertise of his. So not only did he himself perform austerities and please the Lord so that he gets good progeny, but he also realized that once he gets that progeny, how important it is for that progeny to have proper samskaras and be purified. So we see as soon as the 10,000 sons, the first 10,000 sons were produced, it's not that he immediately told them, okay, now start, you know, you also become prajapatis, you also start populating. You all also have be expert in sex life. He realized that they need to first purify himself. And with that purpose, he actually sent them. And therefore, we see the Haryashvas went to the Narayan Sarovar. They performed their austerities over there just to become purified. So that activity they were doing under the instruction of their father. It was only that later that Narad Muni came over there and Narad Muni saw that these children are already so inclined towards God consciousness, they are so inclined towards self-realization, then why not save them from the clutches of material world? Why not save them and give them the fast track back to Godhead? So that is the role which Narad Muni came and played. But Daksha on his part had actually done the right duty as a father. He had actually given that samskaras, he actually stressed to his children that you all need to purify yourselves. He sent them to do austerities for many, many thousands of years. So we see that Daksha is doing his duty over here, and at the same time, Prabhupada is talking about Narad Muni's expertise in this particular verse. So he is saying that Daksha is a material expert. He is very expert in material activities, but Narad Muni is the spiritual expert. And therefore he says sometimes the material experts do not agree with the spiritual experts, but that does not mean that the spiritual experts will give up their pursuit of reclaiming conditioned souls and delivering them back to the lotus feet of Krishna. So we see sometimes, you know, there is always this loggerheads. Spiritual experts and material experts are at loggerheads. And that is why we see so many obstructions when, you know, a devotee is trying to preach or when, you know, we are trying to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. With Prabhupada also we saw, there were so many obstructions he faced in trying to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Like even in every temple that he had to establish, there was so much of backlash he got from many sections of the society. And that is because people do not see that, you know, this particular activity is important. That you need to give time or you need to give land or you need to give resources so that Krishna consciousness can be spread. And Prabhupada himself had to overcome so many obstacles. And Prabhupada obviously is, you know, a great preacher. He's following in the footsteps of Narad Muni. So same thing, you know, Narad Muni we see. He faces these obstructions when he's trying to reclaim conditioned souls. When he's trying to preach to conditioned souls and tell them about Krishna consciousness. And that is what we see over here. Daksha is all, you know, facing, he's thinking Narad Muni is an obstruction in the execution of his duty. So although he is expert and he is not wrong, and he is also serving the Supreme Lord because that was his duty, but he was not a pure devotee. So he was very attached to the results of his activity. He was given the duty that you know, beget children, you populate this universe, but he was very attached that when I have done this duty so nicely, I should get the results that I desired from this duty. Plus he was not realizing the devotional impact of this activity. So you can do your duty towards the Supreme Lord and it might be a material duty in this terms, but that does not mean that it cannot be synthesized with spiritual goals. And that is what Daksha failed to see, the synthesis that he could have had between his performance of duty and what Narad Muni was trying to do. So we see, you know, like it is said in the scriptures that people approach the Supreme Lord with four different motivations or intentions. Some people approach him after bhai, which is fear. Some people approach him after from asha, from the platform of asha. That means lot of desires. Some people approach him out of kartavya. So kartavya means doing your duty. Oh, it is my duty to serve the Supreme Lord, or it is my duty to thank him because he has given me so many things. And the highest is obviously approaching the Supreme Lord out of prema or love. So Daksha was approaching the Supreme Lord because he wanted to do his duty. He was following the tenets of Varnashrama Dharma, where he was actually following his duty of begetting children, of pleasing the Supreme Lord through fulfillment of that duty. But he was not synthesizing the Daivi Varnashram Dharma along, you know, in the duty that he was performing. And therefore we see he had he considered Narad Muni as an obstruction in his service to the Lord. And later on in the chapter, we will see how Narad Muni will save these 10,000 sons as well. Sorry, these 1,000 sons as well. And that time, Daksha becomes really upset. Like, you know, once he saved the 10,000 Haryashwas, he was okay. But when he takes away these 1,000 sons as well, then he becomes really expert and he curses Narad Muni. So there are two aspects which we see over here. So even though Daksha was doing his duty towards the Supreme Lord, like I said, he's a Prajapati, he has to populate the universe. But one was that he was not understanding the spiritual side. His duty was not mixed with bhakti, he was not able to synthesize bhakti, and he was not a devotee, a pure devotee of the Lord. And therefore, he was seeing somebody delivering his children back to Godhead as an obstruction to his service. Not that he was happy that so many souls went, like conditioned souls actually had self-realization. So that is one problem which he had, that he was not a pure devotee and he didn't realize that what Narad Muni is doing is actually very important. It is a much higher duty than what Daksha was doing. So that is something he failed to realize. And secondly, he was feeling envy in his heart. So because he was envious of Narad Muni, and therefore he saw him as an obstruction, and therefore he cursed him. So we see in our lives also we are always at this crossroads where we face these situations that we are trying to do our particular service very nicely, but when we see somebody else also trying to serve in a different way, we see sometimes that there is a conflict which arises. And because of that conflict, we are not able to see things the way we should see from a transcendental platform or rising about the dualities, and we sometimes get envious towards other people who are doing their service in their particular way. So it's like my way or the highway. That is what we are seeing Daksha's attitude as, that the way I am serving the Lord, allow me to do that service properly, and if you, Narad Muni, are coming and taking these children away, then you are actually an enemy of mine. So almost like that, we see that happening, that conflict happening in devotees, as like in our own lives as well. We see sometimes this conflict happening in our mind, trying to be doing our service well, but at the same time trying to like becoming very upset if somebody is not aligning with the way we want to do our service, or you know, it's how the Lord should be served in a particular way only. So I remember a few years ago, Narasimha Kavach Prabhu was giving a class here, and it was a beautiful point you had made, Prabhuji, that we should be attached to the aspect or the culture of service, not to the service itself. So we should be attached to the quality of serving, but not to a particular service. When we become attached to a service, then we see that we become very dependent on the results, and then we become frustrated if we don't get those particular results. But if our mood is just that I want to serve, and we are attached to the aspect of serving rather than a particular service, then we will always find some other ways of serving the Lord. We might have conflicts with others, it might not be aligned with what goals we had in mind, but we will still continue our serving because our attachment is to the serving aspect and not to the service, particular service. But in this case, we see that Daksha is actually attached to his own service, and that to how it should be done in his own way. And therefore we see him becoming upset, and therefore we see him seeing Narad Muni from a point of view of envy, and because of that he does the great aparad of actually cursing Narad Muni, because he was coming from that particular platform. And on the other hand, we see from Narad Muni's point of view that Narad Muni, he's completely a transcendental personality. Like we were discussing in a previous class as well, he appears almost in every canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And sometimes multiple times in each canto, trying to deliver great people, even great devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruv Maharaj, and also like other kings. So all sections of society, he does not discriminate. All sections of society, even the hunter. So every section of society, Narad Muni tries to go and deliver. So that is his compassion, or that is his service to the Lord. And therefore Prabhupada says that he is a spiritual expert, and it does not mean that Narad Muni will give up the engagement of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and spreading Krishna consciousness in different sections of society. So Narad Muni doesn't get phased at all. Even when he's cursed, he does not get phased. And that is where we see how Narad Muni has risen much above what Daksha's terminology of serving the Supreme Lord or doing his duty was. Narad Muni has reached much above that. So even though he's cursed, in so many sections we find Narad Muni faces so many obstructions, but he continues his service uninterruptedly to the Lord. He does not think, oh my God, now I've been cursed. What is this? I was trying to serve the Supreme Lord and this Daksha is cursing me. He does not realize how I'm also trying to serve and how I also am trying to, you know, fulfill the Lord's desire of reclaiming people's conditioned souls and having his children back home, back to Godhead. So he does not become frustrated in his attempts and give up his attempt of preaching. He actually keeps continuing his service. He actually, because the heart is full of compassion, he does not see any obstacles, anything as an obstacle or anyone as an obstacle. And in fact, when he's cursed by Daksha, he just takes it as a blessing. He says that, oh, this is a blessing that I can't have a residence of my own for a period of time and I will have to keep traveling. And that is what I actually want to do in my service. It will aid me that I keep traveling and I keep propagating Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So this is the gist of today's purport, and following in the footsteps of Narad Muni, who was very greatly compassionate and wanted to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, today is also the appearance day of Sripad Ramanujacharya. So it's an extremely holy day, it's a very important day, and we'll spend the next few minutes discussing a little bit about the life of Sripad Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya, as you know, most of us are aware, he was a great philosopher, a great acharya and a great devotee in the Sri Sampradayas. In the Sri Sampradaya, which is one of the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. So all great acharyas explain that without receiving knowledge and without receiving siksha from one of these four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas, one cannot hope to go back to Godhead. In fact, Rupa Goswami goes on to claim that without being initiated in one of these four Vaishnava Sampradayas, we cannot go back to Godhead. One has to be under the siksha or diksha of these four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. One cannot say that I will be on my own, I will do bhakti, and then expect that you will, without accepting a guru in one of these Sampradayas, one can go back to Godhead. Rupa Goswami also claims that. So sometimes we see, like, the Lord himself comes, obviously, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sansthapanathaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So the Lord himself comes many times to re-establish the tenets of dharma when they are lost, and many times he sends his representatives to do the same when he sees that dharma is being lost in society. So with a view of doing that, Vishnu Swami, the great Acharya Vishnu Swami, came to revive the teachings of the Rudra Sampradaya. So the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas are Rudra Sampradaya, which is Lord Shiva being instructed himself by Lord Vishnu. Then we have the Brahma Sampradaya, where Brahma received instructions from Lord Narayan. We have the Sri Sampradaya, wherein Lord Lakshmi Devi, who is the initiator of that particular Sampradaya. And then we have the Kumara Sampradaya, where the four Kumaras receive instructions from Ananta Sesh and from the Supreme Lord himself. So these are the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. But over a period of time, especially in Kali Yuga, some of their teachings were getting lost. And therefore the Lord sent his representatives to revive the teachings of the four Sampradayas once again. And so that the philosophy and the philosophy of the four bona fide Sampradayas could spread, and people would have an opportunity to take siksha and diksha within these Sampradayas. So with a view to that, Vishnu Swami, the great Acharya, comes to revive the teachings of the Rudra Sampradaya. And then we hear the great Nimbakacharya. He comes to revive the Kumara Sampradaya. Madhvacharya, he comes, who is none other than Bhim. He comes to revive Brahma Sampradaya. ISKCON is an institution within Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Madhvacharya comes to revive the Brahma Sampradaya. And Ramanujacharya comes to revive the Sri Sampradaya, or the Lakshmi Sampradaya, as also it is called. So sometimes we think that, oh, you know, we should not misunderstand that Ramanujacharya is the founder of the Sri Sampradaya. So although he was the greatest philosopher and the greatest acharya of that Sampradaya, in fact, you know, he was blessed by Yamunacharya, who was another great devotee, that this Sampradaya will be known as Ramanuja Darshanam, the light of Ramanuja. That is how the Sri Sampradaya will be called, because of your contribution to this particular Sampradaya. But it is not that he was the founder. So there were many great philosophers, saints, acharyas, Vaishnavas who had come many years ago before Ramanujacharya in the same sampradaya, who were also from part of the Sri sampradaya, and they were all spreading the philosophy of the Sri sampradaya. And Ramanujacharya himself gives credit to all these acharyas from whom he derived his own learnings and his own teachings, and on whom he based his writings as well. And these acharyas in turn, these great acharyas who came before Ramanujacharya in the Sri Sampradaya, were basing their learnings on the nine Alvars who appeared. So they appeared many hundreds of years ago before Ramanujacharya appeared. And these nine Alvars are the great stalwart devotees of Lord Vishnu. And it is said they are incarnation of different aspects of Lord Vishnu. Like some of the Alvars are incarnation of the conch, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. Like they are incarnations of these expansions of the Lord. And they were great poets, they were great philosophers. And their teachings are also called as Divya Prabandham. So many of the Acharyas who were there before Ramanujacharya, and even Ramanujacharya himself, based their teachings on these, on the philosophy and the teachings of the nine Alvars. So one of the great devotees who was there before Ramanujacharya, his name was Yamunacharya. So Yamunacharya was a great devotee, he was a great Acharya before Ramanujacharya appeared, and he was, you know, his seat, his base was Sri Rangam. That was his headquarters, and he was propagating the Vaishnavism throughout India during that time, especially in the southern part of India. So I remember a few years ago when His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj had done a retreat in I think Ballarat, some of the devotees had put together a drama on Yamunacharya. It was a very beautiful drama depicting the life of Yamunacharya, whose name was also called as Ala Bandara, the conqueror. And that drama was depicting how Yamunacharya defeated a great scholar called Kolahala. And how then, you know, the king of that time, he actually bestowed half of his kingdom on Yamunacharya because he was so pleased. Because Yamunacharya was actually a great devotee. And he was only a 12-year-old child who defeated the greatest Pandit Kolahala of all times. And because the king was pleased, he bestowed half of his kingdom. And then Yamunacharya forgot the goal of life. Once he started ruling the kingdom, he forgot what was his life before he actually became the king of that particular part of the kingdom. And he was completely misled. He was completely entrenched in the power struggle, expanding his kingdom, like all those kingly duties he was doing. And his grandfather was Nathamuni. He was another great devotee of the Lord. And Nathamuni, feeling great compassion for his grandson, he actually sends one of his greatest disciples, Rama Mishra, to actually reclaim Yamunacharya back. And that whole drama which was done in Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj's retreat was about how this Rama Mishra goes and reclaims Yamunacharya back. And Yamunacharya realizes what he was doing and how he had completely gone astray from his pursuit of self-realization. And he then comes back. He gives up his kingdom, he gives up everything, and he again becomes a great devotee of the Lord. So this Yamunacharya was the inspiring or the siksha guru of Ramanujacharya. Although they both personally never had much interaction with each other when Ramanujacharya was there, but still Ramanujacharya considered him as his siksha guru. So Ramanujacharya's many writings were based on the writings of Yamunacharya. And now there was a very great disciple of Yamunacharya whose name was Shailapurna. And this Shailapurna had two sisters. One sister's name was Kantimati and the other sister's name was Deeptimati. So Shailapurna was greatly dedicated to the service of his guru, Yamunacharya. And therefore what he did was he got both his sisters married to very nice Brahmin boys who were very pious, very devoted. And once he did fulfill that duty of his, he actually took sannyas and he went to live in the ashram of his guru in Sri Rangam. So because he thought his duty is over, now he need not worry about any material responsibilities that he had. And here we see that Kantimati, she was married to a Brahmin called Asuri Keshavacharya. So they were very happily married. She was a very devoted and chaste wife for his Brahmin husband, for her Brahmin husband. And her husband was expert in doing yajnas, So that was his particular duty as a Brahmin. He used to do yagyas, lots of yagyas. But they had one anxiety in their life, that even though they were married for many, many years, they did not have a child, they did not have a son. And obviously, grihastha ashram, when you know two devoted souls are coming together, they do want to have children so that that child can also, they can, you know, make him into a devotee of the Lord. So having this anxiety in heart, what Asuri Keshavacharya did, he said, okay, let us go to the temple of Parthasarathi. So there is a beautiful temple of Lord Parthasarathi in present-day Chennai. But during those days, it was called as Brindaranya. That place was called as Brindaranya. So he said, let us go there, and over there, let us do some austerities to please the Supreme Lord. So because his particular expertise and his duty, Brahminical duty, was to do yagyas, he, in the temple of Parthasarathi, performed a very beautiful yagya. And at the culmination of that yagya, he went and prayed to the Lord and requested him that we want to beget a child, please bless us with a son who is very devoted to your lotus feet. And that night the Lord appeared, Lord Parthasarathi, being pleased with Asuri Keshavacharya and his wife Kantimati. He appeared in a dream to them and he said that you go back to your native place. Very soon I will myself send an expansion of mine, an incarnation of mine, to take birth in the womb of your wife. That is what he came and told Asuri Keshavacharya in the dream. So hearing this dream, they became very happy and they went back to their native place. And very soon, Kantimati became pregnant with a child. And few months later, she gave birth to a very auspicious child, very Tejasvi child she gave birth to. And the exact year is described as 1017. So 1017 of the Christian era, that is when in April, which is the month we are right now, that is when Ramanujacharya was born to Kantimati and Asuri Keshavacharya. So he was a blessing of the Supreme Lord himself. And at the same time, Kantimati's sister Diptimati, the second sister of Shailapurna, also gave birth to a son. So there was great happiness in the family because both sisters had been blessed with sons and they both came together. And they used to live in a place called Bhutipuri. Bhutipur. So they both came together over there. And when Shailapurna heard that both his sisters had given birth, he thought, oh, I must go and bless these two children. And I must also carry the blessings of my guru, Yamunacharya, for these two children. So Shailapurna with great happiness comes to visit both his sisters. And then when he sees Kantimati's son specially, and he sees the great beauty and the spiritual potency of that child, he becomes very pleased. And he realizes as soon as he sees that child that the prophecy of the great Nama Alvar, like we spoke about the nine Alvars who used to propagate Vaishnavism. So one of the Alvars was Nama Alvar, and immediately Shailapurna realized that the prophecy of Nama Alvar has today come true. Because it seems Nama Alvar had prophesized that Lakshman, the brother of Lord Ram, will appear one day in Kali Yuga specially to spread Vaishnavism in this world. And he realized that this has come true and he has appeared from the womb of my sister Kantimati. So being very pleased like that, he actually names that child as Ramanuja. So Ramanuja means, Anuj means younger brother. So the younger brother of Lord Ram. And another meaning is one who follows in the footsteps of Lord Ram. So this is another name of Lakshman. And therefore he names this child as Ramanuja. So Ramanujacharya is actually an incarnation. You know, he has, Lord Lakshman came actually in Kali Yuga to spread Vaishnavism. And that was Ramanujacharya himself. So we see he had great qualities. Now speaking a little bit about his qualities. So he had great qualities. The parents were very cultured devotees. They were great brahmanas. And they performed all samskaras. And even the sister Diptimati, who had a son, Shailapurna named that son as Govinda. So both cousin brothers were like, you know, growing up together. And both of them had great qualities. But especially Ramanujacharya, he was bestowed, he was endowed with such beautiful Vaishnava qualities. He was extremely potent. He was very, very scholar, like, and he could, once he heard something, he would remember that. He would never forget. No teacher had to spend a lot of time teaching him and like sweating blood and trying to make him learn something. Once he heard that, he would completely remember whatever had been taught. Also, he was very humble, very obedient, very submissive, very learned. So he became the pet of all his teachers. The teachers would love to teach him when he started going to his Gurukul. The teachers would really like. And because he was very intelligent, he was able to absorb and learn everything very quickly and progress, like, you know, learn the Vedas and everything very nicely. So these were some of the qualities which Ramanujacharya possessed. Now, so there was a very great disciple of Yamunacharya by the name of Kanchipurna. And this Kanchipurna, he was actually a great servant of Lord Varadaraj Perumal. Lord Varadaraj is a form of Lord Vishnu, and he was very attached to his temple in Kanchi. This is where Kanchipurna was based. And his service to the Lord, because he was such a simple, great devotee, his only service to the Lord was fanning the Lord. So in summer, he would dip the fan in scented cold water, like sometimes rose water or, you know, other scents, and he would keep fanning the Lord. That was his only service. He had no desire to become like a very well-known devotee, or so everybody should come and honor him or respect him, fame, prestige, nothing. He was simply stand and fan the Lord. And the Lord was so pleased with Kanchipurna's devotion that he would talk to with Kanchipurna. So the Lord and Kanchipurna used to have dialogues regularly. And most of the people who lived in that Kanchipuram, they knew about this quality of Kanchipurna. So many times they would go and approach Kanchipurna and request him to speak to Lord Varadaraj about something that was troubling them or some anxiety that they had, and get an answer from the Lord himself. So this Kanchipurna, when, you know, he used to travel to the temple to do his service to Lord Varadaraj, Ramanujacharya's village, Bhutipuri, used to come on the way. And once Ramanujacharya was returning from school and he saw this great devotee passing by, and he immediately fell at the feet of Kanchipurna and he invited him to his house for prasad. And even though Ramanujacharya's parents were also great brahmanas, and Kanchipurna was actually a low, he had taken birth in a low, in a shudra family. So he was a low born shudra by birth, but he was a great devotee. But Ramanujacharya himself and his parents saw no distinction. So even though casteism was so strongly prevalent during that time, they still invited Kanchipurna very lovingly in his house, in their house, and they served him prasadam very nicely. And then Ramanujacharya partook of the maha, of the remnants of Sri Kanchipurna. And then when Kanchipurna was resting, Ramanujacharya started massaging his feet. And they were talking for a long time about, you know, the philosophy, about Vaishnavism, about devotional service. They were speaking for a long time about the Shastras. And when he was massaging the feet of Kanchipurna, Kanchipurna became very uncomfortable. And he told Ramanujacharya that I am a Shudra by birth and you are a great Brahman. So it does not befit you to press the feet and to massage or even touch a low-born Shudra like me. You will lose all your power and potency if you do this to me. And at that time, Ramanujacharya replied, and he was still a young child at that time, but he told Kanchipurna that if my position as a Brahmana prevents me from worshipping a great soul such as you, then my birth is actually the most inauspicious. It's not an auspicious birth, it's an inauspicious birth if it is preventing me from serving a great devotee like you. So a Brahmin is not simply by birth or just by wearing that thread. That is not a Brahmin. A Brahmin is one who is actually a great devotee of the Lord. That is the greatest Brahmin, and that is what you are already doing. So I'm actually doing the right thing by massaging your feet and associating with you. And Kanchipurna was astounded when he heard Ramanujacharya speak like this, because he thought he's such a young child, but he knows the highest philosophy of what is a devotee, what is Brahmanism. He knows all these things about Krishna consciousness. So he was very pleased with Ramanujacharya, and in his mind he was already thinking that this child is going to become a great acharya one day. So Ramanujacharya's father, when he was 16 years old, he got him married. And he got him married to a very chaste and beautiful girl whose name was Raksha Kambala. So he gets him married to him. But within 1 month of the marriage, the tragedy struck that family, and Asuri Keshavacharya, the father of Ramanujacharya, left the world. He passed away, and Ramanujacharya, his mother Kantimati, everybody, the whole family was grief-stricken. And they decided that we cannot continue living in Bhutipuri anymore. So they decided to move to the nearby town of Kanchi, Kanchipuram, and set up their residence over there. So Ramanujacharya, his wife and his mother, they all three went to Kanchipuram and they set up their house there. And over there, in that city, there was a great scholar known as Yadava Prakash, who had his school over there. So Yadava Prakash was actually a Mayavadi. He was a follower of Sripad Sankaracharya. And he used to preach that in his school. But nevertheless, he was a great scholar. He was very learned in the Vedas. And therefore, Ramanujacharya decided that I want to join the school of Yadava Prakash because he had this desire to learn the Vedas very nicely. And Yadava Prakash, whatever it is, he was a great scholar in the Vedas. So he joins his school. He joins the school of Yadava Prakash. And because he had such saintly qualities, very humble, very obedient, very submissive, he became actually a dear student of Yadava Prakash. Yadava Prakash was very fond of this student. He really loved Ramanujacharya. And sometimes it would pain Ramanujacharya to hear the Mayavad interpretations of the scriptures. But because by nature he was very submissive and humble, he would generally not say anything about or against his guru in the school. So, but one day when Ramanujacharya had stayed back with his guru, there was a disciple of Yadava Prakash who came there and he wanted some clarification on a verse he was studying from the Chandogya Upanishad from his guru Yadava Prakash. And that verse was Kapisyam Pundarikam Eva Makshini. That was the line on which he needed some clarification. So he came and spoke to his guru, Yadava Prakash, and he said that, I am not able to understand this word, Kapyasam Pundarikam Eva Makshini. Can you explain what this word means, especially the word Kapyasam? He was not able to understand. So following Shankara, because obviously Yadava Prakash was a Shankarite, so following Shankaracharya's interpretation of similar verses, Yadava Prakash told him that he divided the word Kapyasam as Kapi Asam. And he said that Kapi Asam means the rear end of a monkey. And therefore he said that Kapyasam Pundarikam Evam Akshini means that the Lord's eyes are reddish like the rear end of a monkey. And at that time Ramanujacharya was, you know, pressing the feet of his guru, Yadav Prakash. And when he heard this explanation of this particular sentence, he was aghast. He was very aggrieved because he is a pure devotee of the Lord. So he could not tolerate this particular explanation, explaining the beauty of the eyes of the Lord. And because of that, hot tears started falling from his eyes. He just started crying. He could not control himself. And obviously those tears fell on Yadav Prakash's feet. And he looked up at Ramanujacharya in surprise and he said, why are you crying? And Ramanujacharya explained to his guru. He said that I am not able to hear this particular interpretation of the verse and this comparison of the Lord's beautiful eyes to the rear end of a monkey. You are such a great scholar. It does not suit that you are giving such an interpretation explaining the beauty of the eyes of the Lord. So Yadav Prakash, for the first time, he heard his disciple speak like this and he felt a bit confronted. So he became a bit, he felt a bit challenged and confronted, and then he told Ramanujacharya, he said, you dare to speak against your guru's interpretation of a verse? Then if you know better, why don't you give an explanation of what this verse Kapyasam Pundarikam Eva Makshini means? And very humbly, like not trying to show off or not trying to, you know, defeat his guru, that was not his intention at all, Ramanujacharya gave the devotional interpretation of that particular verse. So he said that Kapyasam can be explained as Ka and P. He expanded that Kapyasam word as Ka and P. And he said that it means that Kam Jalam Pibati, which means that that which drinks water. So he said that, you know, that which drinks water is the sun. So Ka and P means that which drinks water, and that is the sun. And Asam means to blossom. So the real meaning of the word Kapyasam is something which blossoms under the sun, which is none other than the lotus flower. So therefore the real interpretation of this verse is that the Lord's eyes are reddish like the hue of the beautiful lotus flower which blossoms under the sun. So when he gave that explanation, Yadava Prakash felt very confronted and very challenged. And you know, he kept quiet at that time, but he realized that Ramanujacharya can actually completely topple off his Shankarite explanation of all the scriptures. He could already see the potency in that child. And like this on another occasion also they had. So, you know, there were a small confrontations which they started having because there was this difference in the philosophies of Ramanujacharya and Yadav Prakash. And yeah, Ramanujacharya already, he was, you know, his fame was spreading because he was writing Vaishnava interpretations of many of Shankaracharya's verses and many scriptural verses he was giving. The Vaishnava interpretations were not available at that time to the masses, and people were, especially the devotees, were very happy to see this. So already his fame had started spreading in that particular region. And there was a king who used to live there, whose daughter, the princess, had become possessed by a Brahma Rakshas. So the king was very aggrieved because the Brahma Rakshas, he tried so many means that Brahma Rakshas leaves his daughter's body, but nothing was working. And someone told him that Yadav Prakash is very expert in chanting of mantras which drive away such Brahma Rakshas from the body of a person whom they have possessed. So the king sends for Yadav Prakash to come. And Yadav Prakash tries so many mantras to drive this Brahma Rakshas away, but nothing works. And Yadav Prakash himself is astonished because he knew his mantras never failed. So he was wondering, why in this particular Brahma Rakshas these mantras are not working? And that time the Brahma Rakshas spoke to Yadav Prakash through the mouth of the princess. And he said that what you are attempting is not going to work on me. All your efforts at chanting these mantras to drive me out of the body of the princess are going to be in vain. I am not going to leave the body. And you can go back if you want. So obviously the king was also very aggrieved. And Yadav Prakash said, then what is it that will work with you since you are speaking with me? And he said that you call that great devotee, that great disciple of yours, Ramanujacharya, you call him over here. He's a great devotee. He's going to become a great acharya. You call him here. He's very pure in his heart. Only when he comes and blesses and touches the feet of me, like that means the princess, that time I will leave the body of this girl. So immediately, obviously, the king wanted his daughter to be free of this Brahma Rakshas. So he immediately sends for Ramanujacharya. And when Ramanujacharya arrives there, he actually, the Brahma Rakshas in the form of the princess falls down at the feet, and the Brahma Rakshas speaks to Ramanujacharya that you please put your feet on my head so that I am blessed by your divine touch and then I can leave this body. So then Ramanujacharya asks that how will we know you left the body of this princess? And he says that you will see that this banyan tree under which we are sitting, the biggest branch of this banyan tree will snap and fall off when I leave the body of the princess. So Ramanujacharya puts his feet on the head of the princess, and as soon as he blesses the princess like that, the top branch of that tree fell off. And the princess was free, and she actually, when she suddenly came out, it was as if she had come out from a deep sleep, and she was very astonished to see the situation which she was in, with Yadava Prakash, Ramanujacharya, her father, all standing over there. And then they explained to him what had happened, and that is how the Brahma Rakshas leaves the body of this particular princess, by Ramanujacharya's blessings. So Yadav Prakash obviously started feeling great envy towards Ramanujacharya because his fame was spreading like this. He was giving Vaishnava interpretation of whatever Yadav Prakash was trying to, you know, give the Shankarite interpretation. He was refuting all that. So then Yadav Prakash got together with some of his close disciples, his chelas, and he told them that we will have to do something. And his disciples also said, yes, Guru, all your explanations and all your expertise in the Shastras is going to be challenged by this little boy. So what should we do? And then they decided that we have no other option but to kill him. So that is how Yadav Prakash and his disciples started plotting for Ramanujacharya's death. And they realized that his fame had spread so much in Kanchipuram that they cannot do that activity over there. They will come in the light of the people. They might be, you know, furor or something like that. So they said, let's do one thing. Let's go on a pilgrimage to North India. And you know, we will tell him we are going to take darshan of Vrindavan, we will go to take darshan of Yamuna and all that, and over there we will carry out this plot. So they, Yadav Prakash and his disciples, convinced Ramanujacharya, and especially his mother, who was not ready to send Ramanujacharya. They convinced her that no, let him come on this pilgrimage with us. He's such a great devotee, he will love to go to Vrindavan, to take darshan of Yamuna and all that. So he actually went, and his cousin Govind also went. Diptimati's son also went with him. And while they were on that pilgrimage, they were in the forests of Vrindavan. And that time the disciples and Yadav Prakash started talking. They said that we are deep in the forests right now, so this is a very good opportunity to kill Ramanujacharya. So under some pretext, we will send him to the river bank to collect some flowers, and over there we will drown him in the river. That is how we will get rid of him. And while they were discussing like that, fortunately Govinda, who is the cousin brother of Ramanujacharya, he was nearby in the trees and he overheard this conversation. So he was aghast when he heard this about this plot to kill his brother. So he immediately ran into the forest and he told Ramanujacharya. He said that these Yadav Prakash and the other disciples are plotting your death. They are going to murder you soon. You better run away from here for your life. So Ramanujacharya was also very aggrieved that his guru is thinking of killing him. Imagine, for a disciple, he realizes my guru is trying to kill me. So he also thought, oh yes, I do have to run, because obviously Yadav Prakash had so many disciples with him, and how could he overpower them? So he thought intelligence is in just running away, like Govinda had suggested and advised me. So he started running through the forest away from where Yadav Prakash and his disciples were camping. And while running, he was going deep in the forest. He did not know where to go. He was so far away from his home. Because imagine, Kanchipuram is in the south of India and he was in the north. And that time there were no flights or trains even. So everything was on foot. So he was running helter-skelter and he didn't know the way back to Kanchipuram. And at that time, some distance away, he spots a couple. And they were like a hunter couple. He spots them and he's surprised to see this hunter couple in the forest, in deep in the forest that too. So he goes and approaches them and he tells them that I have lost my way. Can you all please help me to get out of this forest? And they ask him, which place were you? Like, what is your destination? Where do you want to go? And he tells them that I'm actually from Kanchipuram, so I want to go back there. And the hunter couple says, oh, that's very nice. We were also on our way to Kanchipuram, so we can take you. We normally go from this forest to Kanchipuram every year. And then Ramanujacharya said, but why are y'all going to Kanchipuram? So they said that, you know, we are hunters. We are like, the husband was a fowler especially. We hunt birds for a living. We sell them, we kill them, we eat them as well. So that is our occupation, and we know it's a very sinful activity. So every year we go to Kanchipuram and Rameshwaram to pray to the Lord there and to get absolved, like to absolve ourselves from our sins that we have been doing by taking up this hunting profession. So Ramanujacharya agrees and they all start walking. And then when night falls, the wife of the hunter becomes very thirsty. And she says, I really need some water. So the hunter says that some distance away from here, there is a well, a little bit like on the mountain. So tomorrow morning when it's a bit bright, we will get you water from that well. So next morning she requests again that I'm very thirsty, and Ramanujacharya says that he tells the hunter, you be by your wife and I will go and bring water for her and come. So he goes and brings water and she drinks that water and she's still thirsty. So she again goes back to drink water and obviously had to trek up some distance to get that water from the well, from the mountain. And like this she keeps sending him 3-4 times to bring water. And once, you know, the fourth time when he's coming back with the water, he sees that the couple has disappeared from there. Both are not there and he's a bit surprised. He saw that just now they were there. Where is this hunter couple gone? They left me and went away. I actually wanted to go to Kanchipuram and now where have they disappeared? So that time he sees another passerby going from there and he asks them. He says that I'm actually on my way to Kanchipuram. Can you please guide me how to go to Kanchipuram? I'm stuck. I'm lost in this forest. And that time that person is very... He's very surprised that Ramanujacharya is asking him that question. He says, can't you see these big temple domes and gopurams of temples here in the distance? That is Kanchipuram. And I know you so well. You are the student of Yadav Prakash and you study in his school. I've seen you so many times in the city. You don't recognize your own city? So then Ramanujacharya sees and he realizes that that hunter couple was actually none other than Lakshmi Narayan, who had come personally to help him, to guide him back to his city, to his town of Kanchipuram. So where he goes over there, he meets his mother, Kantimati, who is very surprised. Because, you know, when you go on a pilgrimage like this, from South India to North India, that too on foot, she was expecting he will come back only after 6 months or something like that. But she was surprised he had come back within a month. And then he tells her the whole story that how, you know, this Yadav Prakash had tried to kill him. And because of that, he had to escape from there. And Govinda explained, you know, revealed whatever the Yadav Prakash was plotting against him. And therefore he came. So Yadav Prakash, when he returned after a few months, he was also astonished, because when they actually went looking for Ramanujacharya, when Ramanujacharya ran away with a view to kill him, not with a view to find him, they thought that, oh, looks like he's been eaten by animals. So they concluded he was killed already. And they were internally, they were very happy and jubilant that their work was done by the animals in the forest. So when they come back to Kanchipuram, they're very surprised to see him. And he obviously, Yadav Prakash feigns like ignorance, and he sheds crocodile tears, and he says, I'm so happy to see you, it's good that you are back, and you know, blah blah blah. So like that, you know, Yadav Prakash just tries to embrace him and show him as if he knows, but Ramanujacharya already knew what was in Yadav Prakash's mind. And Yadav Prakash then invites him, no, you please join my school back, I don't want to lose you as a student. So just for, you know, show, because there were so many people who had gathered, so just to maintain, keep his face in front of others, he invites him back to his school, and Ramanujacharya also joins his school for some time. So ultimately, but Ramanujacharya could not take it, and he leaves Yadav Prakash. Like, you know, they keep having these confrontations, and once he challenges him, when Yadav Prakash was trying to give some explanation of the form of the Supreme Lord, and he's like, you know, how he's formless and all, that time Ramanujacharya challenges him, and then ultimately he leaves Yadav Prakash's ashram. And then he decides that he wants to take initiation from Kanchipuram, from Kanchipurna. So he keeps requesting Kanchipurna that I really want to take initiation from you, I really want to take initiation from you. But Kanchipurna, being a very humble devotee, and he did not want any other service except fanning the Lord. So he actually talks to the Lord, and the Lord tells him, that tell Ramanujacharya that one day he will take initiation from a very great disciple of Yamunacharya. And this is the message he conveys, and he says, just be patient. And you know, one day your guru will be revealed to you. So in the meantime, Yamunacharya was about to leave his body. Like, he had become very old and he was about to leave his body. And Yamunacharya, before, like, he was about to leave his body, one day he had visited Kanchipuram for taking darshan of Vardaraj Perumal. And at that time, from far away, he sees this effulgent boy, Ramanujacharya. And he realizes that, you know, this is not an ordinary child, looking at the qualities and the tejas of this child. So he actually asks some of his disciples that, who is this boy? And they explain to him that he is, you know, Ramanujacharya. He is actually a great devotee, and he has already started writing so many explanations of the scriptures and mantras. And that time Ramanujacharya, like I had said, he had already started becoming famous because of his Vaishnava interpretations of scriptures. And Yamunacharya then was very, he said, oh, is it that same Ramanujacharya who had given such beautiful explanations of some of the verses for which Shankaracharya had given very monistic explanation? But what is he doing with this Mayavadi Yadav Prakash? Because that time Ramanujacharya was with Yadav Prakash and few other students. They were walking in the streets of Kanchipuram. So he says, the disciple says that, oh, he's a student of Yadav Prakash. And that time Yamunacharya was very aggrieved. And he thought, I must send someone to save this boy from Yadav Prakash's clutches. Because Yadav Prakash, he knew Yadav Prakash was a great Mayavadi. And Ramanujacharya, it will not be helpful for Ramanujacharya to stay in his school for a long time. So he was about to leave his body, and that time he remembered, because he could already see that it is Ramanujacharya who is going to carry forth the tenets of Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. So his final wish was that he told his disciples, and especially one of his great disciples, Mahapurna, he told him that, can you please quickly go to Kanchipuram and bring Ramanujacharya here to Sri Rangam? I'm about to leave my body and I want to see him before I leave my body. So Mahapurna goes to the village of Ramanujacharya, to Kanchipuram, and he gives him the message. And at that time, Ramanujacharya is very aggrieved that his Siksha Guru is going to leave this world because he had accepted Yamunacharya's teachings. So he rushes with Mahapurna, but obviously they are traveling on foot and it takes some time for them to reach. And by the time they reach Sri Rangam, Yamunacharya had already left his body. So Ramanujacharya and Mahapurna start assisting all the disciples in, you know, preparing for the final rites of Yamunacharya. And that time Ramanujacharya observes that three fingers of Yamunacharya were in bent position. They were folded. So he asked the other disciples who were regularly in association with Yamunacharya, and he asked them that would Yamunacharya usually keep his fingers folded? And the disciples say, no, he had his fingers straight out. He would never usually keep them folded. So then Ramanujacharya, being, you know, inspired by Yamunacharya from within, he realizes that Yamunacharya wants Ramanujacharya to fulfill certain wishes of Yamunacharya, which he himself could not do. So standing there, he proclaims in the assembly of those devotees. Ramanujacharya says that today I am taking three vows. My first vow is that I will spread the message of pure devotional service by my example, words, and by my body everywhere throughout India. So as soon as Ramanujacharya takes that vow that I will spread pure devotional service, Yamunacharya's one finger opened up. Then Ramanujacharya takes the second vow. He says that I will write a Vaishnava commentary on the Vedanta Sutra named as Sri Bhashya, refuting Shankaracharya's arguments and spreading Vaishnavism throughout the land of India. So as soon as he takes that second vow that he will write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, Yamunacharya's second finger opened up. And then he takes a third vow. He says that due to great gratitude and appreciation for Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadev, who actually propagated the glories of the Lord from the Vishnu Puran. So he was a great devotee. He propagated the glories of the Lord. And in appreciation and gratitude for Parashara Muni, I will name one of my disciples after Parashara Muni who will carry forth the tradition of spreading Vaishnavism. And as soon as he heard that particular third vow, Yamunacharya heard that vow, the third finger opened up. And all the disciples who were present there, they were completely astonished to see this prowess of Ramanujacharya. And they realized that their guru Yamunacharya had invested all his powers now in Ramanujacharya, and Ramanujacharya would be the next person after their guru Yamunacharya who would become the head of the Sri Sampradaya and who would spread Sri Sampradaya far and wide. So they were very pleased to see this particular aspect. And then, you know, the final rites were done very nicely. So after these final rites were done, Ramanujacharya actually returns back to Kanchipuram. Even though all the disciples request him, you make your base over here, he returns back to Kanchipuram. And on the first disappearance anniversary of Yamunacharya, all the disciples gather and they are discussing, they celebrate the disappearance of their guru, but they also discuss that there is no one right now who is spreading Sri Vaishnavism like a guru used to spread. It has come to a plateau. There is no revolutionizing that is happening right now in the people's minds. And we are seeing that Shankara's teachings are taking deep roots amongst the society. So we need someone who will actually now take up this cause fervently and who will work hard towards spreading and dedicate his life towards spreading this mission of a guru. And they could think immediately of Ramanujacharya. So they told, again, Mahapurna, who was the greatest disciple of Yamunacharya, they told him, can you go and bring him back? And you also give him initiation, because Yamunacharya could never initiate Ramanujacharya. So he said, you go and give him initiation and you bring him back over here and let him make Sri Rangam as his seat, as his ashram, as his base, from where then he spreads Sri Vaishnavism all over the country. So Mahapurna does that. Like, obviously that's a long pastime again, how Mahapurna initiates him and how Ramanujacharya's wife does not honor Mahapurna's wife. Mahapurna was a grahastha, so they live with Ramanujacharya for some time. But again, Mahapurna was also not a Brahmin by birth. And Ramanujacharya's wife was very entrenched in that, you know, we are Brahmins by birth, we are higher birth, that casteism. So she actually disrespects Mahapurna's wife, saying that you are a Shudrani and your water cannot touch my waters. You know, so these things happen and Mahapurna and his wife actually leave. They go back to Sri Rangam. And Ramanujacharya is now thinking, how do I come out of this clutch of grahastashram because my wife is not even understanding how to honor a great devotee. So there's this whole pastime how he then tricks his wife and he sends her off to his to her father's house on the pretext of some wedding preparations that she has to help her father and mother with. And when she's gone, he sits down and takes sannyas. And his sannyas guru was none other than Kanchipurna. And Kanchipurna, because you know he could realize that Ramanujacharya is the next great acharya, he gives him the name Yatiraj during his sannyas ceremony. So that is how Ramanujacharya takes sannyas and he comes to live in Sri Rangam. And that time again there is a famous story of this great saint Goshtipurna. So this great saint Goshtipurna had, you know, a mantra, and Ramanujacharya, Mahapurna told Ramanujacharya that if you want to make your devotional service very intense and you want to practice with great intensity, you want to practice devotion to the Lord, then you should go to Goshtipurna. He has a mantra, a secret mantra, which if you get from him, you will not only become very deeply entrenched yourself in Vaishnavism, but you will be able to purify many, many thousands of souls by being empowered by that mantra. So Ramanujacharya, following the instructions of Mahapurna, he actually travels to Goshtipurna and he requests Goshtipurna for that mantra. And Goshtipurna was a great devotee and very humble devotee as well, but he was very afraid to give this mantra to anybody. Because he knew that this mantra is very potent, and if it falls on the wrong ears, and if the heart of that person is not pure, then actually he would be doing an aparadh by giving that mantra. That is how Goshtipurna was thinking. So he refused to give that mantra to Ramanujacharya. He said, no, no, you come later. Right now I can't give you the mantra. So Ramanujacharya, it is mentioned in the scriptures that he went 17 times, he travelled from Sri Rangam to Goshtipurna's place. And it was quite far, he had to go by walk every time. And every time Goshtipurna would send him back saying that, no, no, not now. And Ramanujacharya kept thinking that my guru is thinking I'm not pure in my heart and that is why he's not ready to give me this mantra. So it was not that he gave up his endeavour, saying that what is this, let me go to somebody else. This guru is now, you know, taking too long to initiate me. Not like that. He kept persisting. He realized that I have to improve to be able to then deserve this particular, you know, mantra, to get this mantra from this guru. So he kept going to Goshtipurna, and on the other hand, Goshtipurna was praying to the Lord that this boy keeps coming to me for the mantra, but I'm very hesitant to give him that mantra because it should not be given to anybody and it should not be spread like this far and wide because it is such a secret mantra. And that time the priest of the temple speaks, the Lord empowers the priest of the temple to speak to Goshtipurna. And he says that no, this boy is very pure at heart. He's the next Acharya of Sri Sampradaya. You please give him this mantra. It will be of great benefit to you, to him, and to the whole society. So that time, that was the 18th time that Goshtipurna then agrees to give that mantra when Ramanujacharya comes to him. So Goshtipurna tells him that, okay, you take a bath and come and I will give you this mantra. But when I give you this mantra, it is such a secret mantra that you should not tell loudly anywhere and you should not give this mantra to anybody who doesn't deserve it. I'm giving it to you because you are a pure devotee and the Lord has instructed me personally to give you this mantra through the priest. So then he gives the mantra, the 8-syllable mantra he gives in Ramanujacharya's ears. And he says that by chanting of this mantra, one can be delivered. One can go back home, back to Godhead, to Vaikuntha. So Ramanujacharya receives this mantra from Goshtipurna and he's so happy. He feels so much bliss. And then when he's walking back to Sri Rangam, he's thinking in his mind that this mantra is so powerful that it can take anyone back to Godhead, the chanting of this mantra. So why I should keep it just with me? Why can't I spread it to everybody so that all people, all conditioned souls are benefited by this mantra and they all can then go back to Godhead? So with that deep compassion in his heart, like we saw in today's purport, Prabhupada talking about Narad Muni, that no material experts can put impediment in the path of spiritual experts like Narad Muni, who are wanting to spread the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra everywhere. So same way we see Ramanujacharya as well. With deep compassion in his heart, he knew he was going against the order of his guru, Goshtipurna. But that compassion overwhelmed him to then take that decision of giving this mantra to everybody. So he climbs, you know, there is a place called Tirukottiyur. If you go to South India, the temple is still there. You know, there was a Vishnu temple in Tirukottiyur. He climbs on the top of that mountain, of that temple, the dome of that temple, and he loudly proclaims. He says, everybody gather over here. I have a very great treasure to give all of you, which will deliver y'all from the clutches of birth and death. And when he proclaims that, thousands and thousands of people gather around that Vishnu temple. And then standing on top of that dome, he gives the mantra out loudly to all of them. Om Namo Narayanaya. So he gives that mantra to everybody and he says, chant this mantra every day and you will definitely go back to Godhead. It will deliver you to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So everybody, like, because they were receiving this mantra from such a pure devotee like Ramanujacharya, everybody was feeling devotional ecstasy and they were all chanting with Ramanujacharya, Om Namo Narayanaya. And when Goshtipurna heard this, he initially became externally very angry. And he came to meet Ramanujacharya and he told him that, I told you not to give this mantra to anybody. It is a secret mantra and here you are standing on the top of a temple and proclaiming it loudly and giving to everybody. Now, you know, because of doing this aparadh, you are going to go to hell. Are you realizing that? And then Ramanujacharya falls at the feet of his guru and he tells him, he says that what is the harm if this one soul, Ramanuja, goes to hell and suffers in hell for millions of lifetimes, but if everybody else is getting delivered and going back to Godhead, how does it matter if this one insignificant jiva goes to hell? And when Goshtipurna heard this from the, you know, coming from the lotus mouth of Ramanujacharya, his heart completely melted. And he realized that this is a great devotee who has come to actually spread Vaishnavism, who has come to show great compassion and who has come to take all these suffering conditioned souls back to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So that time he embraces him and he says that, no, you are actually a true devotee. I did not realize and I do not have this compassion in my heart. So this was Ramanujacharya's compassion. And there's so many things we can learn. But one aspect, you know, synthesizing this with Lord Chaitanya, like Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took two aspects from each sampradaya. And from the Ramanuja sampradaya, from Sri Vaishnava sampradaya, Lord Chaitanya actually took the two aspects of unalloyed devotion, which means ananya bhakti, which is free from karma and jnana, and also bhaktajana seva, that means service to Vaishnavas. These are the two aspects which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took from Ramanuja, from Sri Sampradaya, from the teachings of Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya spread Vaishnavism throughout India. His main purpose of descending was, because he was the first Acharya who came after Sripad Sankaracharya had disappeared. So monism, like, you know, was spread throughout, Mayavad philosophy was spread throughout India, and his main purpose of coming was to defeat that Mayavad philosophy and to establish the pristine teachings of devotional service and the personal form of Lord, worshipping the personal form of the Lord in the hearts of people, and that is what he came to achieve. And then we see Madhavacharya came, like many other Acharyas came, who actually carried forward the work of Ramanujacharya. But Ramanujacharya was the pioneer in this particular endeavor to wipe out monism or Mayavada philosophy from the world and to establish Vaishnavism in the world. So we'll end the class here. It's very late. Any questions, comments, corrections? How do we compare Hare Krishna with Om Namo Narayana? So the purpose of every sampradaya is different. So although all are pure Vaishnava sampradayas, but the goal of the devotional service which is practiced under the umbrella of that sampradaya are different. So when we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to propagate pure love for Krishna. Obviously, we know he is Radharani who came in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to taste that bliss and to spread, to give that pure love of Krishna and to deliver everyone back to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So he came to spread that particular, you know, being the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis, following in the footsteps of the gopis. So he came to give us that Vraja Bhakti, that pure love for Radha and Krishna. And if you see Ramanu, Sri Sampradaya or Ramanujacharya's Darshanam, you know, his Sampradaya, their worship of the Supreme Lord is in awe and reverence. So they follow more of Dasya Bhav. And therefore we see the mantra also has that effect. So Om Namo Narayana is a mantra which will help people worship the Supreme Lord in that awe and reverence. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give the higher rasas, like, you know, the Sakya ras, Vatsalya ras, and obviously Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us the highest, which is Madhurya ras. But we see in Sri Sampradaya that, oh my Lord, you are the Supreme Lord and I am your insignificant servant and my duty is to worship you. So there is a lot of awe and reverence, but obviously we don't look down on that because that is also a pure, you know, teachings. Dasya ras is also extremely exalted. So, but that is the goal of that particular sampradaya and the mantra which is chanted in that particular sampradaya. Whereas the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is to give us highest Madhurya Bhav to the lotus feet, at the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So that is what we can see. So we are very fortunate and we should take full benefit of being attached to this particular sampradaya where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came himself, Krishna came himself to give Madhurya Bhakti to all of us. Thank you.
The question I had was, you mentioned four wise people approach the Lord. One was the other two, one was the prayer, what were the other two?
Bhai. Fear. Bhaya. Fear. Asha. Asha means desire. Out of lots of desires they approach the Lord. Fear, desire, duty and prema. Yes, that is what we see Rupa Goswami saying. So, Shiksha or Diksha. But we have to be attached. Like we have to, obviously we know that everybody has to have a guru so that the guru can deliver somebody back to Godhead. One should not endeavor or think that on their own strength they can go back to Godhead. But that guru should be within one of these four bona fide sampradayas. Whether it's Diksha Guru or Shiksha Guru. Yeah, 100%. Sometimes, you know, again speaking of myself, in ISKCON we tend to look down on Vaikuntha and Goloka is very high, but Vaikuntha is also in the spiritual world. It is very difficult to just go out of this material world. It is difficult even to just go out of this bodily consciousness. What to speak of then practicing, you know, pure love for the Lord. Again, I'm speaking for myself, but yes, it is a very high destination to achieve, even Vaikuntha Bhakti. Rose, you wanted to comment something?
It's actually easier to get to God than it is to buy because to get to Vaikuntha, you have to go through, you know, very difficult mysteries and follow. But to get to God, you just have to get the message in your mind.
Very true, Prabhuji. Thank you. He's the most magnanimous avatar who has come in this world to deliver all of us. So, yeah. Thank you, Prabhuji. Any other questions? Highest is?
The highest service that we give to Krishna is it
prema? Prema.
Now, this prema, is it love? What aspect of love is it?
So, Srila Prabhupada translates Krishna consciousness as devotional service, not just devotion. So, when we talk about love, like, you know, love is not lip service. Like, oh, I love you. It's not like that. You know, even with children, parents have that expectation, and obviously children should do that. They don't just say, I love you to their parents, but don't serve them. Yes. So extrapolating that same principle, when we talk about love, we talk about devotion, it is not just lip service where we say, oh my Lord, I love you, and then doing whatever we want and not following the instructions of the Lord. So it is also serving the Lord. And, you know, with a child, again, you know, talking of that example of mother, father and a child, the best service a child can do to the mother, father is following the instructions of the mother and father, being obedient to their their instructions. So that is what Srila Prabhupada also translates devotion as. He says it's not devotion, it's not an armchair philosophy, but it is active devotional service to the Lord, following His instructions and serving Him in the way that He has instructed us to serve Him. So that is the definition of love, where we are actually following the instructions of the Lord and His representatives and the Guru, and we are serving the Lord in the way that has been described in the Shastras. Yes. You're welcome. Yes. Yeah, I heard about it. Thank you. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yeah, thank you, Prabhuji, for bringing that aspect of, the statue of Ramanujacharya was inaugurated very recently by the Prime Minister himself of India. It's a beautiful statue, and it's a great step forward for Vaishnavas, so that's really nice, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, sometimes the Lord covers the holy places. He does not reveal it to everybody. Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yes. So have I understood correctly? If Goshtipurna was a Brahmana, why didn't he give Ramanujacharya the mantra in the first instance itself? Why he didn't see him as being pure? Very nice question. So I think there are two aspects in this. One was Goshtipurna, like, you know, before a guru initiates a disciple, he always has to test the disciple to see whether the disciple is really having that intense desire to take the initiation or to get that mantra, and whether he is actually ready to go through the wait period or to do those austerities which are required then to get that mantra, whether he is ready to purify himself. So that is one aspect where, you know, Goshtipurna wanted to really ensure that he is giving the mantra to the right person. Because if he gives the mantra prematurely, then, you know, the value of the mantra might not be felt by the disciple, and he might not take it with as much devotion as he would have normally otherwise taken, because he was made to wait. So that was one way of Goshtipurna actually wanting to test Ramanujacharya's determination in getting this mantra. And on the other hand, also obviously Ramanujacharya's glories were revealed through this pastime, that he did not give up so easily. Even though he had to travel 17 times, he still traveled on foot back and forth. So it's a great lesson for all aspiring disciples to learn, that if your guru is making you wait, that's okay. Like, be patient, keep doing your devotional service nicely, and one day you will get the mercy of the guru. So both these aspects come out through this. Thank you. So we'll end the class here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande.